It's not actually Mean Girls. No. It's everyone's been a mean girl. You've been a mean girl. I've been a mean girl. It's this.
And we all know as women and mothers that the phenomenon doesn't go away.
No, it stays with you forever as adults. So this is exciting if you're listening. This is a new Monday podcast, and it is its very own podcast. It is Kat and Nat, and you are listening to our new podcast, Parenting Teens and Tweens. So often we touch upon it in our regular podcast, but this is going to be dedicated parenting conversations, and you will also hear an expert followed by our little chitty chat in the beginning. Each Monday, we're going to talk about the current issues, topics that are facing parents and teens and tweens, and like I said, we'll bring an expert in.
And this podcast is called Parenting Unfiltered.
Yeah.
Which,
or Parenting Teens Unfiltered. You guys can let us know which one you prefer, Parenting Teens Unfiltered or Parenting Unfiltered. But I really do like that it is for an older demographic.
Yeah.
Yep. And tweens and teens is too hard. Just assume your teen starts at like 9 years old. Mm-hmm. Assume nine.
Yeah. That's when it's about to begin. And this podcast is brought to you by The Common Parent. And as a member of The Common Parent, you'll get access to Better in 5 Topics, which are tangible ways to make you a better parent in just 5 minutes. Because you know, as parents, we don't have a lot of time. And when we need to learn something or do something or to have the words to say, we need something quick. You don't have time to go to the bookstore and get a book. You need to figure it out. And we deliver them straight into your inbox so you can search our growing database. You can search any topic and podcasts will come up. Better in 5 will come up. Ways to talk to your kids, advice.
It's so valuable.
Yeah. And there's no more wondering about what to do in that moment, because it'll be right there for you, and you'll have access to monthly roundtable discussions, and we'll chat with you about hot topics that are going on in the world, similar to the podcast, but in more intimate experience. Make sure that you join The Common Parent to get more of this.
Yeah, and also I think that the more we talk about it, the more I'm seeing it pop up is the teen and tween world, that people can it's an underserved market, and it's like parenting on the fly, and a lot of people are doing in-depth courses. And you know, I think that things are changing so quickly that you can't even imagine what's coming, and that's why you need something searchable so quickly. Mm-hmm. Like, what can I do right now? What can I do? What can I say? And just so you know, if you do go and search topics, it helps you across the board with all your relationships. You'll find out it helps with everything.
I know.
It's not just
I just can't believe how often I'm sitting talking to a parent, and so often there's just nobody for them to talk about, or they haven't had a moment. And then they get an ear and they see someone who's listening, and they just start sharing everything. And every single time I want to say to them, there's so much I can say to you right now, but we obviously are just passing because you're going to get your kid and I'm going to get mine. But if you join The Common Parent, you will have so many answers
and
right
help
there.
Support.
Like, just, I just, I'm like, just do it. We always say, I was talking to some older moms about it, like older moms like our mom's age, and I was just saying, I can't believe that this The Common Parent isn't given to you through the government as
a no hip like
as
a
no
thing.
Hip thing. It should there's no reason.
Oh my god, we should actually get on that.
I know.
I'm gonna try to find that. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a way.
Yeah, I mean, there's just no reason why parents shouldn't have access to this. We don't need to go at this alone. So the topic today.
Mean Girls, and it really is an amazing expert that you guys will hear in a minute. And you know, if you don't have time to listen to the whole thing, and you remember, we can send the whole thing right to you, Better in 5, and you can get the whole topic of the breakdown. But Mean Girl phenomenon, I mean, we've touched on it, we've seen it, we've experienced, we've talked about it. Like, it's also Mean Boy phenomenon. Mm-hmm. It's sort of Mean Girl phenomenon is the label for what the behavior is. Mm-hmm. It's not actually Mean Girls.
No.
It's everyone's been a mean girl. You've been a mean girl. I've been a mean girl. It's this.
And we all know as women and mothers that the phenomenon doesn't go away.
No, it stays with you forever.
And what we really want is, we want two things. What I want with when I'm talking about the mean girl phenomenon is, I want my daughter to be equipped with understanding the behavior, so she doesn't take it in and it crushes and ruins her forever. And I also want to make sure that she knows the impact of being a mean girl on someone else.
And I don't think they always know Mm-mm. what a mean girl looks like, or Mm-mm. a mean, because I think boys do it in a different way. I think that I really think chirping is Mm-hmm. can be a mean behavior, because we mask it as chirping, and you see, like, kind of that's what I think a mean boy behavior is.
So, you know what, my boys do it to each other, but in the chirps there's always some truth. Either the person that's saying it has their own securities about that thing, mm-hmm. or they want to make fun of the other person, and doing it in a joking way makes them think they can get away with it. But 100% the person who's receiving it, especially if they know it's something personal, are taking the laugh joke out of it and they're feeling it.
And as a parent, I think the mean girl phenomenon is that it's behavior that makes you feel a certain way, but you can't pinpoint it. Like you can't, you're like, was that, what that made me, that, am I reading this wrong? Like you sort of, it almost is like gaslighting in a mm-hmm. really weird way because mm-hmm. it leaves a child feeling insecure mm-hmm. and unsure. Mm-hmm. And
it's and so often excluded. Is
excluded.
A big one.
Yeah. It's like a frenemy situation. You're like, mm-hmm. you're like, wait, was I invited? Was I not invited? Was I, am I reading this wrong? Mm-hmm. Like you're ignoring me, but you're my friend during the week. Mm-hmm. I mean, you ignore me all week and then you want to be my friend on the weekend. During the week, am I reading this wrong? Or are you actually being a mean girl to me? And I'm so, it's like, it messes with your mind. And I think we underestimate that's their world. Mm-hmm. They have nowhere to go. They have to go to school.
It's so true.
Nowhere to go.
You cannot run away from it. And you're going to, so you're going to have to figure out, and we're going to have to help our kids maneuver the world.
And then you grow up and a lot of the people, the women in your lives, whether it's someone at school you have to deal with, they're still.
Or someone online.
Are still mean. They're still sort of mean girl. And I think if I could define mean girl as a mom, it would be behavior that's almost uncontrollable and they don't know why they're doing it.
Yep.
And something is bothering them mm-hmm. that they don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. So they have a behavior that is like it's to the core mm-hmm. spiteful and kind of mm-hmm. like fuck you. Mm-hmm. And it's premeditated but also uncontrollable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do say to any of my kids who do that mean girl, mean boy, I look at them after. I said, does that make you feel better inside to send that away, to send those words out of your mouth over to someone else?
I know.
Because it's hard to comprehend why they would want to just be unkind. It seems like they're being unkind for no reason.
It's their reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anyone's mean to the core. I mean, they're psychopaths, but I don't know how many. Yeah. I wonder how many. I mean, there's entitlement. There's ego.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many. I feel like I'm seeing ego problems that become sort of like, well, it doesn't matter because I'm better. In a boy world right now more mm-hmm. than I'm seeing it in the girl world. Like I'm sort of seeing, I don't know if you guys have this in your world, but I'm finding the clout that's given. There's so much more clout. I can't think of when we were younger what was clout. The status, like right now, sports is clout. I guess in America, always football has been clout, mm-hmm. like the cheerleader and the football, like traditionally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to think of Canada. What was our clout growing up? And I can't really put my finger on it because we didn't have elite sports in a way that we knew about that wasn't in our everyday or at school.
Maybe being rich.
Did you really know who was rich when we were younger? In my brain, like I couldn't. Was it really anyone's like, oh, they're so rich? Maybe dating someone. I remember one girl dated a hockey player, like a Leaf, and it was so scandalous. And he would come and like.
Maybe just simply being attractive?
Maybe.
At least they've got more options for clout now.
There's so much clout. Shoes, hair,
mm-hmm.
Who you play for. They all wear these stupid jackets. The girl, like the girls too, with the levels of, there's all these levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, you know, and I guess we would really have to talk to people who played competitive sports back then.
Because
we didn't know anybody.
But it's such, everyone in our world plays some type of, it's like they played this kind of, it's like elite is higher than triple, like it's all of these levels that mm-hmm. now are becoming, I guess there was always hockey because obviously my husband played it. But
I remember my brother playing hockey a lot and I had no idea what level.
Yeah.
I had to ask him. Because I just saw them as a hockey team.
But did he feel like he had clout because of it?
I don't know.
So I'm just curious because I feel like...
He'd be a good person to ask.
Because I do feel like some kids feel like they're better if they're on a better team. They're mm-hmm. better than people if they're on a better team.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the girls respect them different. Everyone respects them differently mm-hmm. based on where they're at, which leads to this they have more... They can be mean and everyone's like, oh, it doesn't... They take more shit from people. So the whole... phenomenon of this this society of, yeah, no, actually I would say the girls, it's kind of status of what they look like, yeah, still. What, yeah, how much, what are their trip, like the kind of untouchables, that whole untouchable.
Yeah. And the worst part is just like that, you know, if we're talking about mean girls again, is people going home and crying and being upset and being sad to go to school the next day. And
well, there's bullying and mean girls, and often mean girls are your friends.
Yeah.
Or people in your lives that you're very close to. And mm-hmm, that's just my definition.
Yeah.
Where it's like mean girls are kind of like this thing where it's, you live it.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you're in a relationship with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not the truth. But our expert is going to take it away, and they are the expert in this. And I'll tell you why, because it is, are you ready?
Mm-hmm. I'm ready.
Rosalind Wiseman, she was the author of the book that inspired the movie Mean Girl Phenomenon and How to Help Your Teen Navigate Those Challenging Friendships. So it is literally, she was the Mean Girl movie. If you know the Mean Girl movie, you know how significant its release was. And it just got re-released. And my kids, the little ones, love it. Watch it, watch it, watch it. Like, they watch it obsessively.
Okay, I gotta go watch it.
It's a musical. You mm-hmm probably won't love it.
I like musicals.
Oh, then you'll like it. Yeah, she and Busy Phillips is in it, and Lindsay Lohan are both in it.
Lindsay Lohan. You know, okay. All right. Well, take it away.
This is Rosalind Wiseman, and you have a plethora of experience. Rather than me reading your bio, what do you like to be best known as or best known for? And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I think the thing I like that's most important for people to know about my work is that I don't do anything, no book, no article, no movie script, no anything, without young people vetting, critiquing everything I do. No advice I give to parents has not beforehand been like word for word, have, you know, teenagers have gone through it and said, this is not good, this is good, please change that word. And I think that's the thing that no matter what, like no matter where or how I'm working, I think that's the most, that's the thing I want people to know the most about me, is that any expertise I have is because I'm in partnership with young people.
I wish the world could run that way. I feel like it would be a much more educated, yeah, and evolved place and reasonable place.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. You know, Mean Girl Phenomenon is such a big topic and conversation, and we know it applies to boys too, but for the topic of today, we'll stick to sort of the phenomenon of mean girl or mean behavior,
because so many parents all the time who have daughters say, I hear them say all the time, like, why is still a thing? Like, all of them are talking about it all the time.
It is amazing to me that people don't realize that there are things that are evergreen, right? So like, there's always going to be the need for young people to be in a group, and that friendships are always going to be incredibly important, and conflict in friendships is always going to be there. And so few of us have been raised to be able to handle conflict effectively, for all different kinds of reasons, that of course these issues are constant. I mean, the thing that I ask women all the time is, when you were growing up, how were you allowed to express your anger to other girls, to boys, to people in your family? How were you allowed to express your anger? And what were you permitted to do and what were you not permitted to do? And very quickly, you get to a place where you start to understand how like super profound, deep these issues go, and how they're in the background, like our operating system, whether we know it or not, and how it impacts the way that mean girls or how kids are dealing with each other. And it certainly impacts the way that parents are dealing with each other.
What would be like a good, as a parent, what would be a good example of allowing our children to express anger?
Well, so one of the things I tell girls a lot is that being angry at a friend is pretty much inevitable. But expressing that you are angry is not mean. Onto itself, expressing that you are angry at somebody is not mean. And I know we get to a place for a lot of girls and women that if you express your feelings of anger and frustration with somebody, that the other person can say, like, you're being so mean. And in onto itself, it is not mean to do that. If you are going to do it in a way that strips somebody of their dignity, demeans them, gaslights them, ghosts them, that is not okay. But just the content, actually being able to express when you're angry at somebody, that is not mean. That is just, that is like a basic human skill that we all need to have from the time we're 12 until, you know, we're working and our relationships and everything.
Wow. I guess we should start at the very basics of, like, what age do we begin to see the mean girl, mean behavior start?
Yeah. So, you know, it's really common for, you know, what's funny is I'm going to say like age 5, and maybe, and just people who are listening to this and watching this are going to say, oh, I've seen it at 3.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it too.
So well, maybe I should say like,
mean. They're mean right. people at you.
Right. Like, I think maybe I should say like, oh, you know, at a year. As,
yeah.
as soon as.
Yeah.
But really by kindergarten, I think, you know, you really do see that relationships are important to children and that they get into conflicts with each other. And friendships, like best friends, are so intense. And so you get upset when somebody takes your friend away. And you don't know how to regulate yourself really well. So, you know, when you're 4, you bite them.
Yeah.
Like, right. Or you're like, or actually you're so straightforward about how you feel. Right. Which is like, I hate them. I hate them for taking away my friend. And, you know, really, I think the thing that is really important is that it is so easy for parents to lose themselves in the conflicts of their children. And we know, this generation of parents knows way more, and think that's a good thing, by the way, to know way more about their children's lives than their parents did about them. Mm. And it's not necessarily a good thing. We think that, you know, the more information we get, the better off we're going to be. And really, if you think about it, why? Like, we have a lot more access to information on all different kinds of things. Has that made us necessarily happier? Has that made us more sane? Has that made us more balanced? No. Has, like, knowing every single, or thinking, you know, every single thing about your child, or thinking that that's an important thing, has that made us be healthier, more sane, balanced parents? Absolutely not.
I was also going to say, I'm assuming if you're more involved, it, because at the core of what I hear you saying is mean girl phenomenon is the inability to handle conflict.
It is. That's a really good way. So thank you for saying that. So basically what I think is that for the most part, that most girls are raised, and women are very much trapped in this too, that you are raised with these kind of rules of anger that I talk about in Queen Bees, the book that Mean Girls was based on. And it's that if you get frustrated or you get angry at somebody, that one of the rules, one of the common rules, is that you just sit on it and you internalize it and you beat yourself up for, you know, it's your fault in some way. Or another way is that you sit on things and you sit on things, and then you wait until something, you just can't take it anymore, and then you blow up about something small. But because it looks like you're blowing up about something small, everybody else can look at you and say, like, you're being ridiculous, and fall back on these kind of negative female stereotypes of making too much out of something, being too.
She's so dramatic.
All those things. Right. And that's when gaslighting totally starts to happen. And then the other way is that you sit and then you blow up with somebody, but you blow up on somebody that you know you can get away with it. Because there's a lot of women and girls who will say, like, oh, I tell people what I think, and I tell that, you know, and they sort of get in a self-righteous kind of mode. And then they talk about how they totally destroyed this person. But they do that selectively. You don't blow up and go after somebody and attack somebody unless you think you can get away with it. Mm-hmm. So if there's somebody that you, like, really want, like, you think has higher social status than you, or equal social status, or you need something from them, or you want something for your daughter, you're not going to do that. You only do it with people that you can get away with it. And, you know, for a lot of women, I know we're going back and forth between women and girls, but there's also drug abuse and substance abuse and alcohol abuse when you're angry and you don't know how to get out of it. You don't know how to address. Yeah. So those are some of the things. And none of those are about, like, I have a problem, I need to talk to you about it. This is what competent girls and women do, is they talk about their feelings and their anger in a substantive, competent way. And they don't hold grudges afterwards.
So the Mean Girls, the movie, which a lot of us have seen, and based on your book, it's about a group of girls who are friends, but are actually don't are not friendly together. They have a social tier. If I'm sitting here and I'm like, how do I know what a mean girl looks like, or how am I defining as a teacher or somebody what a mean girl looks like and that behavior is, and are they often friends? Friends.
Oh, gosh. I mean, girls are so tricky. I work with them, right? I like all I do is work with young people and they are so tricky. And, you know, one of the ways that they're really tricky is, you know, is girls can come to you for advice and really be like, oh, Ms. Wiseman, like, you really helped me a lot. This is super helpful. And then turn around and be incredibly nasty to somebody. And one of the things I want parents to realize, moms to realize, is that when girls are being aggressive or mean, they usually think that they are justified in doing it. Something has happened that makes them feel like they are in the right to treat that person the way they're treating them. And so it makes them, so it makes those girls really hard to get them to see their behavior, because they really feel like, no, I did that because this girl did this to me first. And so they're really, really convincing when they talk to their parents about how they didn't do anything. And you're sitting there thinking like, ah, you defended this other kid, like, oh, this girl was being mean to you, so you were only just defending yourself, right? So it's just, it's complicated. I think the thing, frankly, to like succinctly answer your question, is that more than just being mean, it's that the more girls are invested in pleasing other people and also pleasing what they think the culture wants of them and how they should look and how they should act and what they should have and all of those things, the more they think that they should have those things, the more they get into trouble.
Okay. It's just, it. So if we, you know, there as parents or as people who have children and teens and tweens, when they come home and they're like talking about a friend who, you know, the friend who plays cat and mouse, pulls them in, pushes them out.
Yeah, totally.
How are we helping our children? It's confidence. Like, you know, we usually say, oh, they're insecure. They're just jealous. That used to be
Do not say that.
So I was going to say, what's the narrative? Yeah. Of she's feeling this. Why don't you try to put them back in the driver's seat? Because I'm assuming if you're on the brunt end of receiving mean girl, it's very different, and you're not sure if you're giving it at the same. Like, it sounds like they're so self-assumed they can't reflect.
Yeah, I mean, you know, here's what I think. I think that as a parent, as an educator, and I know, and I get into situations with work in the middle of these kinds of crises, all different kinds of crises with schools and with parents and families, and really have gone through my own stuff as a parent. When you find out, if your child comes to you and is talking about another girl being mean to her, which is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
So here's where I would like slow your roll and take a pause, because there's this thing that happens where parents get emotionally hijacked. And their stress and their anxiety and their own experiences as a young person start to take over the dynamic. And what's really important in that moment is not to say things like, they're just insecure, they come from a bad home, because they, you know, just show them who's the better person, don't let them see that it bothers you. Because by the time most girls come to their parents, they've been thinking about talking to you for a very long time. So then these are all understandable responses to say, because we grew up hearing that. But instead, you can say, like, I'm really, really sorry that this is happening to you. Thank you for trusting me to tell me, right? Because it is a risk to tell most parents. Because here's the thing. Most parents are going to say, well, what happened? Well, where was the girl? Well, where were you? Well, what did she say? Well, what did you say? Was there an adult around? Well, and that is so overwhelming. And it doesn't come across as like this comforting kind of, I care about you questions. It comes across as an interrogation. And it's overwhelming and girls shut down. Or they tend to just tell you anything to get you. It's like, I got to stop this conversation right now. So it's over. And then she's focused on you instead of talking about what she's going through. So it's understandable as a parent to hear this and start asking all these questions, because you think the more information you know, the better. But you got to slow it down and say, like, thank you for telling me. Like, thank you. This is hard. So let's think about what you can do to have a little bit of control over this situation. And because girls are so worried that if they tell you that you are going to take away their technology and that you are going to have a judgment about that friend and that she's going to then, if she goes back to that friend, she's going to have to hide that relationship from you. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of incentive to actually not tell you. So I really want parents to slow down and say, I'm really sorry this happened to you. Thank you for trusting me to tell me. And you could even add, I'm not going to, you know, go and write an email to the parents or start calling parents. I need to talk with you first about what we can do so that you are having a little bit of control over a situation that doesn't sound like you feel that way. You can also ask them, do you want my advice or do you want a vent? Mm-hmm. And then you have to actually follow that quite right. You can't start giving advice when she says, I just want to get this off my chest, which is the vast majority of why girls talk to parents.
Huh. How do you know if you have a mean girl? Do we all have mean girls?
Oh, good question. I think most of us have had experiences where we have like our own as people and then as our children have had experiences where our children have not acted in ways that make us proud, right? I mean, when my oldest child was in elementary school, we were at a playground. And he was being so obnoxious to another kid. And I wasn't really paying attention, honestly. I was like reading a book. And a parent came up to me and said, is that your child? Clearly indicating mine. And out of my mouth came, no. Like, totally lied. Totally lied. Because you look at that and you're like, why do I want to own that? Why would I take ownership of that crappy behavior?
Amazing.
Right? And then, you know, of course, like he looks like me. He's like coming up to me and being like, mom, right? But you have to acknowledge the messiness. You can't just take ownership of our kids and they make us look good. You got to take ownership when you don't want to. And you could have moments of like, no, I don't know that kid. But you do need to step into that moment. And so, you know, the question of, how do you know if your daughter is a mean girl? I mean, I think specifically if she sees things very much like you, either with me or against me, that's an indicator. If she is very socially intelligent and you can see her sort of positioning herself with other people or against other people, that's an indicator. If she's very, very concerned about having social status, that is an indicator. So that's not like each of those onto themselves is not like, oh, this is what you've got. But when you have a combination of that, I would believe it. And I would start to think about it that way. And then the other part is that if you are hearing from adults, and adults are also not great, they usually tend to like sit on things and then explode at you too. And so if they're trying to say like, hey, you know, and they do this weird thing of, so, you know, there's some things that maybe are happening that I'm sort of like being,
oh,
you know.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
It's because they don't know. It's hard to talk about, right? And they're worried and they're feeling like you're going to get defensive and all that. And so if people are actually trying to get their courage up to say, hey, your kid's doing things that are really a problem for me, then, or for my kid, listen to it, because it's really hard for them. And for the most part, it's really hard to tell other people about your child being a brat, except for like those few people that it's like their mission on earth to be like this, that you take those people with a grain of salt. They could be right. They are annoying. They could be right. But there are some parents who are like, this is my job and I'm going to go sort of police everything, which the children either hate or ridicule. By the way, let me be clear.
Are 14-year-olds though going to their parents, or are they dealing with, you know, this on their own and then just sort of avoiding being around those people? Like, how can we as parents help? And number one, not parent a mean girl, and number two, give them tips if there is a mean girl in their life.
So what was the first part of your question again? Because that was
just like, you know, a lot of tweens and teens aren't going to be like, oh, mom, there's this mean girl. Can you call her parents? Right? They'd rather
tell you. Vast majority of girls are not going to tell you. Absolutely not.
And I don't know if they can label it too, right? Often they're like just the popular kids, so that's just what they do, right? So it becomes different language.
Yeah, when I wrote Queen Bees and Wannabes, I created this taxonomy, right? That then you see in the movie and people use all the time, from political leaders to middle school. And I wrote it because this language and these names, because I wanted people to be able to look at behavior and say, this behavior looks similar to me. And the more you know about yourself, the more you can self-reflect. And if things that are not so great, you can be like, oh, that's not so great. I see myself in that. I need to think about how to be different. I think the vast majority of girls talk to their parents a lot, right? They do. Where there's a lot more from the past generations of girls talking to their parents, but they're still selective about what they say. Mm-hmm. So it's a really important thing to think about in terms of, like, when parents say, my daughter tells me everything, just track the fact that she might be telling you a lot of things, but she could be still selective about what she's saying. And most girls.
Totally.
Right. Most girls are. And they have reason for it, because I just want you to think about it from the whole interrogation thing. The classic thing of, like, getting into the classic thing of getting into the car at the end of the day. And, you know, people like me have told people, parents, for so long, you know, your child's in the car. So have these really meaningful conversations with the child in the car. I'm like, absolutely not. You actually get the kid in the car and you say something that expresses your, like, you know, like, you're happy they're in your life. But when I talked, like, I had a 14-year-old girl say to me recently that her mom says when she gets in the car, walk me through your day.
Mm-hmm.
Walk me through your day from the beginning to the end. And if there's any cops of girls, the mom is going to be like, so what did you do? And you're going to be back into that interrogation phase.
Mm-hmm.
So answer to your question about, like, well, how do I get my daughter? Like, this is really about relationship building, and it's about giving her space as she gets older and being able to say, hey, you're getting older now. I don't care if you're 10 and in fifth grade or if you're 14, but I would say around fourth or fifth grade, like, things get a little bit more complicated at your age with friendships. Like, friendships change, and, you know, things and conflicts can happen, and you can get really angry at friends. And so, you know, if that happens, that's normal, but it also can be really hurtful. And both of those things are incredibly true, right? It's normal, it's common, but it's also hurtful. And so you want to affirm your daughter's feelings, and you also want to say, but you're not alone. And when you do that and you say, so if that happens to you, you can come talk to me. But also, if you don't feel comfortable coming to talk to me, let's think about who else maybe, you know, I think is good and you think are good that you would want to talk to that's not me. Because as you get older, it sometimes can feel a little bit funny to want to talk to your parents about these kinds of things. So again, you're saying, like, I see you. I see that you're getting older. I see that you might need some different things. I'm allowing you to have that kind of freedom, but I'm still putting guidelines around that so that I know who the person is that you're going to talk to. And the rule, if your daughter is okay with that, is that you will not know what that conversation is about unless she's actually, like, physically in danger. So you
said an example of this person, of a person like that, me.
Well, there. I mean, my sister chose that for my children, whether I liked it or not.
Ah.
Like what sisters do, right? They're like, oh, I'm that person. And you're like, are you? Do I have a say in this? She's like, no, you don't. But no, I mean, you know, this is what my, like, you know, this is what your parents are for. I mean, grandparents, I know, are good for, you know, giving gifts and stuff like that, but they're really for, honestly, when my children have gone through phases of not being so great, it's been incredibly helpful for my mother to say, yeah, I love you and you're my grandchild. And this behavior right here, so not into that. That's not the word, but But you're, you know, here's the thing I think schools make a huge oversight about, which I talk to them so often about, is they say as a soundbite to our children, if you have a problem, go talk to an adult. Well, which adult? Because some adults are terrible at this.
Yeah.
The words I use to answer this question that you're asking me that sort of encompasses everything and it connects to them not being mean is that to say, what are the three things, characteristics you need in an adult that would deserve your trust in going and talking to them when you have a problem? So what are the three characteristics that you need, you have to have for this person to deserve your trust? And then they're going to say they can talk to me, or they're not going to judge me. And so like things like that. And then you go to, okay, well, who are the three people or the one person that matches your list? And then what you're signaling is asking for help is not a sign of weakness, which, by the way, Mean Girls very much connect to that. If they show weakness, that there is some, if they show that they're human beings, there's something weak about it. So you are signaling with positive role modeling and skills, asking for help is not weak. And there are adults that I trust that you can trust. So you're expanding your village, right? That, you know, it's not just about you and your relationship with your child. And that person can really walk this and help us navigate the road. And I think other people's children, like if you're close with a group of girls, or your daughter is close with a friend group, and you can be each other's that person for the girls, that's incredibly helpful. I mean, it's not mandatory, and you can be other adults, but, you know, I certainly have been, you know, that person, and there have been adults in my children's lives that have been that person. So I think it just expands our social network, and it also makes young people feel that they have to be responsible to a set of values that are incredibly important, and that puts the brakes on mean behavior.
At least we're not encouraging them to text each other and be like, you were so mean to me. Like, we're not encouraging them to communicate to the the boundary of how do they put their boundaries in if it's a chronic, their best friend who is mean for a month and nice for a month. I mean, like, is that just mean behavior for a minute? Like, can they speak up for themselves and say, I don't like this?
Of course they can. I mean, most girls, you know, look, all of us have been in dysfunctional relationships and friendships, and we didn't wake up one morning and say, like, oh, now I'm ready to end my dysfunctional relationship, right? You really learn a lot. If you can, you can learn a lot about boundaries in dysfunctional relationships. So what I do with girls is I say boundaries keep us safe and steady in relationships, and that boundaries can change. One of the things when you're talking about a hot and cold relationship like that, friendship, is that if the girls are on us, they're on to us, more to the point, about what we think about that girl. And when we talk about it with them, they tend to feel like we're putting a wall down of like, do not be with this person anymore. And it's not realistic for most girls to do that. And so when they're in, and then they will shut down and they won't talk to us. So what I do is I say, boundaries keep us safe and steady. I actually make a sort of a similarity of the thing I just did with the adult. I say, what are the three things you have to have in a friendship? All girls are going to say trust, loyalty, and be myself, and honesty. And you say, all right, write down the like top three things that come to your mind that describe this girl, right? That you're in this hot and cold relationship. And then the question is, are you getting what you say you have to have? And that's the question that the girl has to answer for herself. And these are actually skills that they have to use for their friendships and for their intimate relationships.
Totally.
So you are literally navigating with her through the process. You're involved, but you're not doing the work for her. And you're saying, like, just think about it. Just like she's going to look at this list and she's going to see it, because girls are smart. They're going to see it. And it's going to be a little bit embarrassing. And just say like, hey, you don't need to make any decisions right now. Just like look at it and think about it, because this is your life. You get to make it. You get to make these decisions. And I would also say to her, I know that whatever decision you have to make, you have to live with it. I don't, which is true. She has to live with it. She puts a boundary up with this girl. She has to live with the consequences of that, which can be really hard. Mm-hmm. So last thing I say to girls in that situation is, what is the smallest thing you can do to have autonomy, to have independence, to get out of this dysfunctional, and they would say toxic, but toxic relationship that you're in? But I always focus on the smallest thing, because anything is actually a big thing to do to break the pattern in a toxic relationship.
And one example would be?
If she hits you up on five social media platforms, you do not have to respond to her within 5 minutes. And if she says, you're being so mean because you haven't responded in 5 minutes, you can say, this is the small thing that's actually enormous. well, actually, I am having dinner with my family, or I have to do my homework right now. Or so it's like, you're being so mean. Actually, no, I'm not. I need to do X, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a huge thing. Just being able to recalibrate reality for girls and their friendships is enormous, absolutely enormous. Or being able to say, like you said at the very beginning, when you ditched me, you know, last Friday night, or you told me that, or you didn't tell me about this thing and everybody else went and I saw you on whatever social media, whatever, platform, that really hurt. That's huge, huge to be able to say that.
Right. And it will often recalibrate the relationship.
She doesn't look weak. And Mean Girls, here's the thing that I think a lot of parents don't understand, is that being nice to a girl who is being mean does not look like being nice. It looks like being weak. And so you really need to be able to say, like, the power in vulnerability, which is so hard for all of us, but to be able to say, yeah, I saw that you ditched me. You know, I do know that. And she's going to gaslight you and say, that didn't happen. Like, you said this, da, 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 whatever. It will be total gaslighting. And so for your daughter to say, no, actually, I mean, I saw it and it hurt. I just need you to know that. That's it. That's all. There's no like fake, you know, oh my God, I'm so sorry. There's nothing. There's no fakeness. There's nothing. She just actually, if she could say what she's experiencing and just say it, that is enormous, enormous amount of strength.
Right. Where can everyone buy your book? I feel like we have so much work to do. No more interrogations. No more she's insecure. Where that book? I mean, obviously your book is amazing. Where can people find you? Can you come to every school?
I am working as hard as I can. I work internationally also, so I'm often not in the United States doing this work. So it's I'm about half overseas and half in this country. Rosalind Wiseman is .com is my website. I'm actually doing a lot of advice on TikTok for girls that
amazing
people. And it really, the most important, and this is true for me or any, you know, parenting expert or anything, is that, you know, if you read a book and like, don't think that we have the truth, because your daughter actually knows the truth and your relationship with her is So, yeah. So like, watch the TikTok videos and you turn to your daughter. They're like a minute or two. You turn to your daughter and say, where is Rosalind wrong? Where is she right? That conversation is way more important than anything that I'm saying. And that is the case for any of these parenting experts. Most important is read it, talk to your kid and say, are they right? Are they wrong? Because we don't know your children. We don't know your children. I have a lot of expertise, but your child knows her context.
And then, like you say, every parenting expert brings something unique that they can have a conversation about, right? Because it is just communication and conversation, which leads to where we are, just the conversation is what to have. Wow, you are so...
And a lot of looking in the mirror and being like, I am not going to have a self-righteous temper tantrum. I am not going to have a self-righteous temper tantrum. Yeah. I'm not going to do it, even though it's so tempting. So yeah, so I have lots of resources and I hope they're helpful. And if, you know, people watching this, if they have things they want me to talk about in my videos or give advice about, hit me up. I'm happy to do it.
On your DMs, in your TikTok or on Instagram, which one should they DM you on?
Do it on both, because I do it on both.
Amazing.
I think you're going to get flooded very soon.
Okay. All right. We'll see. We can do part two. We can talk about that.
Yes. It's just really, such a unique perspective of how we can handle it. And we got some work to do. So we really appreciate everything you said. And it's not a situation. It seems like it's a lifelong event that we have to do over here. So
it's parenting. Who knew?
I was hopeful you would just say something like, take a time out and go for a walk. But no, that's not how it goes. So I'm joking. Thank you so much for everything. I can't wait to go follow and on TikTok and watch all the videos.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thanks for having me.
I appreciate it.
Bye.